I thought I'd start off with a talk, maybe 10 minutes or something, to give a, just hopefully inspire the seed for some discussion. And so I thought it would be useful to look back over the last 12 weeks. It's been a long time for some of us. Right, and see if there are any themes. And so something that I think is interesting and positive is that, I guess a few years ago, when many of us were just learning about condensed matter physics, there was a sort of, you know, this alien CFT box, and then you just calculate something and you see what you get, and then you hope that it looks like something interesting. And, you know, occasionally it does, but sometimes it doesn't. But now I think there seems to be a bit of shift within the field, this workshop, which is somewhat away from doing that and more towards trying to understand what the basic mechanisms of that are at work in holography are, especially as they might pertain to condensed matter physics. And I think this sort of shift, I'm not by any means suggesting there's an opposition between these, but sort of from phenomenology, an attempt at understanding, I think it's suggestive of some kind of maturity in the field. And also I think these sort of more sort of understanding themes have allowed the strongest overlap and then kind of theory, because it doesn't really see if it's by force, it just calculates stuff. But it's a framework that may or may not be similar to things that connect other people already think about. So I thought of four examples of what I mean by this. And so one of them has to do with cage dynamics. And so this is related to words like fractionalization. Confinement, and so on. And so these kids have a list. So you in the first week, Sunstick Lee talked about doing RG flow on, well, yeah, I'm not going to say what everybody did, so there were talks by Sunstick, by Nabil, and Diego, and Subir, and Hong Liu, and Sinto. Most of that, yeah. I don't know which one's which. Catherine, Andreas, Fisher, and me.
Good thing the board is wide.
And I guess John, I guess. So that's definitely been easy.
So I think this is a natural thing to talk about, because cage dynamics is clearly is a fundamental principle that's operating behind ADS-CFT as we understand it, in the cases that we understand well. And so cage dynamics is also closely related to the physics of horizons, and somehow describe deconfinement in various forms. So, okay, I think this has been a very positive interface, and you can see there's a healthy mix of condensed matter and high energy names in that list. Okay, so another, people can contribute any point they want. I guess another list that sort of goes towards understanding things has been discussions of entanglement entropy. So we've had several talks. This is Bakova, Liu, Tadashi, Wang. And I guess this is nice. This is somehow, it's meant to probe, it's a very sort of universal observable. And it's particularly universal in the sense that it goes towards entropy, which ADS-CFT deals with very nicely, because it likes to geometrize entropy. And so I think these two things are really great, because they're definitely playing towards the strengths of ADS-CFT, which is gauge dynamics and the geometrization of entropy. So these seem like very healthy things to be thinking about. And of course, there's some big questions here. In particular, there was a current discussion about Fermi surfaces. Whether you can see them or not in the entanglement entropy. So entanglement entropy, Kinesana colleagues, many of them are pretty adamant that Fermi surfaces should be universally associated with some log L term in the entanglement entropy, which seems a bit elusive from a string theory perspective. And I don't think we understand that yet. Right. So another nice sort of conceptual thing is, I guess, holography and RG flow. So we have talks. It's also Sansik, Joe. And Shuren. A week or two ago. I can hear you'd like to understand. So here, I guess it's not clear. There's some, in particular, Sansik and Shuren's talk, who are trying to sort of derive holography via the RG flow. So it's not clear if it's going to be pragmatically useful, but it may definitely lead to some understanding of how holography works in a way that seems to be suggestive to condensed matter physicists. And finally, I guess this is a venerable but still growing strong, is hydrodynamics. Also universal in its own way, and ADS-CFT gives you a specific set of theories where you can actually derive hydrodynamic behavior from first principles. So we had talks by Sun, this panel, and okay. We talked about these are all, I guess, related to anomalies in some way. All right, so that's my list of themes. I haven't included everybody's talk on this list. If anyone wants to add one, it's a good time to do so.
One interesting thing that's recently become clearer to me, at least based on discussions with Joe, is that I think it's not necessarily true that we need Marge and Yang-Gill's theory to get a good holographic description. So maybe it's worth saying that a large density by itself can drive the weak string coupling and hence the control expansion. So even some of the classic examples of ADS-CFT have this property, but they weren't really interpreted this way originally.
Do you think there's a hidden... So can I repeat what you said? Maybe I don't know.
Yeah,
I think what he was saying is so not normally the way we think is we have a large M gauge theory here, and then the curvature, this large M is inversely related to the curvature of your ADS space. It's weakly curved.
Sorry, I thought the curvature is related to the coupling and M is related to the string coupling.
Let's go to M theory and,
well, so the same. So string theory, G string N goes like some power of the curvature of string units, some power of the radius of string units.
It just depends on if you stick an L plank here or an L string.
Okay. Well, if we work in string theory, you're used to the ADS 5 plus this 5, where R to the fourth feels like G string head. I'm going to say it's a fact that if, for example, you instead take a bunch of zero brains and smear them in the same number of dimensions, you get the curvature radius to the fourth goes like G string times the density of zero brains over some range of scales. And
right, I was just getting that. So I guess what he was saying is that another option. If you have a large amount of flux,
coming out to infinity, then that will push open a region in the IR.
That will also be weakly curved. This is not the Ritchie scalar, this is the, I suppose it's L, it's the scale.
Right, so.
But it's not a, you know, if you think of the spirited P direction, it's not a people's one-dimensional gauge theory.
But yeah, but.
You can treat it semi-logarithmically, a couple of U1 if you want. It's a density which has certain funny properties of some sort of matrix theory, but it's not a higher dimensional gauge theory.
But I think it would be interesting to know, yeah, right, Denise, is, I mean, whether there are some gauge, there might be some gauge dynamics in some suitably invariant sense that is at work.
No, that's fine. I'm just saying it's not necessary to have a higher dimensional Yang-Mills theory if you want to.
I'll speak at once. Okay. So I guess also I wanted to mention a couple of things that actually maybe were I think are interesting and might have been on this list, but were somewhat missing, partly due to people canceling and not coming and so on. But one things that might have been underrepresented. So one example has to do with breaking space-time symmetries. So, should we know any talks on this? So I'm thinking of stripes, things like stripes and Neymanic phases, maybe. But these seem to be pretty important in condensed matter, and there are, I don't think we have a nice Neymanic phase yet, but there have been some string holographic constructions of stripes. And then something else that we did have a couple of talks on was far from equilibrium dynamics.
Would you call it the fits among space, the breaking space? The fits, you know.
Let's not include Lorentz invariance. Right, so we break Lorentz invariance all the time, but.
I guess you could add impurities also somewhere.
Sure, okay, yeah, I'm thinking it's sort of spontaneous, but yes, okay.
Or not in that, category in itself, something. But I think this seems like a natural set of questions, because strongly quantum time-dependent problems become classical time-dependent problems, which sounds like it ought to make it a bit easier. But we didn't have much on that. Is the holographic dual of topological insulators, for example? Or was there any talk on that?
Yes, so Andreas talked about that, and I guess he can also loosely put John's talks under that connection. Any other comments about?
Just a stray comment about stripes. So after my talk on magnetic brains, I got an email from Jerome Kotlov informing me that two especially ones that have a marginal instability against striping. Meaning if you tune away from supersymmetry in some directions, they strike. I don't know why.
Interesting. So this is a setup. Let's see. So
Magnetic flux?
This is where you turn a magnetic field in, say, some of the global symmetries of the AES. And if you do it super specially, it's stable. And in my talk, I talked about all the ways it might be unstable if you do it in symmetry. And I didn't consider stripes because but then Jerome said, yes, those that you play these. I don't know why, it's exactly marginal in superspectral case. And then, but it becomes more stable if you go, it becomes more stable if you go in the directions where it was going to be stable, so it doesn't.
So there's a finite K, instability? Yeah. Sorry, instability or marginal? Which one?
Marginal for the superspectral.
Okay.
So
I mean, does it exponentiate in the supersymmetric? Is there a family of supersymmetric inhomogeneous solutions?
It's not clear. In the list of things that are underrepresented, I wanted to ask, how many thoughts actually use string theory?
Some of us tried to introduce the brain instructions.
Does that count?
Shannon's not.
So I'm not if, right? So Shannon
definitely.
Chris Hertzog. Chris Joe wasn't that anything.
No, it was ours. No, but lots were gradual.
Yeah. So we only know like the consistent theories. Something.
It's too hard, is that a problem?
Well, it
but it's necessary.
It's actually not too hard in certain examples where people actually solved the problem, so. Essentially one of these finite density examples a few minutes ago. And in fact, they give singularities of the, like the ones you were talking about, where finite momentum, U2 plus something's law, actually, we're working on that now. And these are very much stringy corrections, or invisible moments of gravity descriptions.
Of course, Benson definitely is very. Yeah. So yeah, I guess relates with and this string theory came up. I guess it's possibly being relevant for understanding two PF singularities. I think maybe a special mention should be made at Benson's talk because it actually addressed a question that came up on the very first day of the program. And we had a talk about it on the very last week, which I think is a nice thing. I guess I'm gonna use quantum gravity at least, which is beyond the supergravity, limit.
By the way, Sean, you should take a photograph of the board to submit as your final report for the.
Does someone have an iPhone? Okay, so I guess the other thing that was the last 12 weeks, I guess. any other comments about this last 12 weeks? Before we start looking to the future. So I wanted to mention a couple of things I'm confused about that have come up during this program, and then maybe this should be easier to make a list for. So one, okay, so how about
open questions, I think it's a nice positive way of putting it.
So I'll get us started.
So regarding entanglement entropy,
So Tadashi gave a talk at this program, and then a paper came out a couple of weeks later, and it's slightly, in my opinion, slightly provocative. So maybe good to think about. So what he did, okay, so that, as I mentioned, that there's this log L, so the claim is that the entanglement entropy, let's say for a strip, and we have a Fermi surface, the term, I think, in 2 plus 1 goes like L, a log L. And so what the Dashian collaborators did was just reverse engineer a geometry that gives you, that would give you this. And so the geometry, and in the IR, he used a dilaton, right, so dilaton Maxwell gravity. With the flux infinity, so there was a charge density, which is a good thing. And then if you tune the potential of this dilaton in a very particular way, so that I might get this wrong, but as phi goes to infinity, the potential of the dilaton, I'm probably going to misremember. I think it had to go to zero. A particular coefficient. Here, I use dilaton in a loose sense, just to be in a scalar field that couples to F. And for a particular value of this potential, which is very fine-tuned because you need it to go to zero, so that this potential has no positive exponential terms, only negative exponential terms, and the leading coefficient has to be exactly right, then you get the log L.
Is part of the potential, is the geometry, is it kept?
Is there a continuous spectrum? Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he calculated. That's right. Good. So yeah, so he calculated the specific heat, and he went to see the alpha, and he showed that alpha was less than 2/3 or something from using positive energy. Yes, energy. I can't find it was some energy condition.
Yeah.
No, but this is the whole point of using this entanglement entropy, is that you might see fermions without seeing fermions. But the reason this is a bit...
Is there an extensive Rancid degeneracy in this case?
No.
I don't
know. Now, and for other cases, for other powers here, he can also get L to some non-nullity, to some non-integer power. So here are some things that I find a bit confusing about this. Right. Let's. Okay. So firstly, one interpretation that actually seems to be suggesting, and that some people like, but I find very confusing, is that this is the only case that this is a Fermi surface, that all the other potentials are somehow long, sick, for some reason that we don't understand. And certainly you can get many different theories that have string theory embeddings, and non-duals do not have this form of the potential. So it's certainly not the case that that's the only allowed potential by string theory. But the suggestion seems to be that somehow only these potentials are Fermi surface like. It seems like a pretty strong.
Did you
give me
the stringy corrections?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, add leading order.
I mean, we know many examples like this
where we were just down the level. No, yes, sure. And let's say in the geometry of leading order in
this sense, you can see it without having explicit family on the same level.
But I'm asking something. So if you don't have explicit family, but you include the string corrections in the case.
Right, then.
The general problem of the two camps. Other examples.
So even this is a little weird, why this particular potential should be special in leading order at large n, and change this number a little bit, and suddenly there's all. Yes.
I'm a little confused about that. Like, so what he does is, so he assumes that if you have a frame surface from in that spatial, then you're going to have a log in the entanglement. Then he says that if I choose geometry or background, and I just basically put the metric in that or other fields in that geometry, and use real-time Fibonacci formula in order to get logarithm, what constraint should be, and besides this weak animal condition. But then one objection they have to this is that it's not clear whether real-time Fibonacci formula is correct when you have matter fields in the system, right? Especially formula. One particular example is the following. If you just take that formula and compute that for Lipschitz fixed point, okay, you find that formula doesn't depend on Z at all, because, I mean, you're just in a constant time surface, and then it doesn't care about Z. Whereas in condensed matter, I mean, Mike Mulligan, Eduardo, these guys have been working on entanglement entropy of Lipschitz systems. And you do find dependence on Z, right? So there are two things. Either the Lipschitz geometries that we talk about is not actually representing Lipschitz fixed points, or real-time Fibonacci formula should be modified in some way to account for once you have more degrees of freedoms.
But there are, you can actually think about having some matter by dimensionally reducing. So then if you would use the real-time Fibonacci in higher dimensions, you reduce that's equivalent to using it in lower dimensions of matter. So that should be worked.
Isn't there generally to be some attractive
behavior? So I'm not sure that matter is the cause.
But logically speaking, I think that it's a reasonable comment that into this conclusion there was an assumption about how you calculate entanglement entropy. And I guess the idea that of it only coming to gravity is to do with horizons being so universal, right? The entropy of horizons is always given by the area independently of whether it's charged or scale. But
on physical grounds, if you put like fermions in the system, I mean, would you really expect the computational entanglement entropy is just that surface? I mean, or you would assume that implicitly by back reaction of fermions to the geometry is going to change, and as a result, the entanglement entropy formula, the holographic one, would see the effect of fermions.
Oh no, that's another question. You know, sure. So right. So, and this doesn't affect. Let me get to that in just 1 second. One possibility is that, right, so it seems that there are three. There really are three possibilities. I think either it's true that somehow the only places where you get sort of fermions in some sense at leading order large n and alpha prime without putting them in explicitly is in this setup. Another possibility is that this Ryu-Takanagi formula is not right, or the other one is that it's not true that you have to get log L every time there are fermions. And this sort of. So maybe there's a weaker statement like that. Maybe you just need some non-elasticity in L.
It can't be worse.
So what is L to the 0.1 worse or better than log L?
To the 1 plus 1 is
worse.
1 plus 0. 1 plus
0.1 is worse. Oh, there's an L here, sorry.
Yeah. I don't think you can get that from
L. Right, but what about L to the alpha?
Does this provision look like it's coming at leading order in?
I don't know.
People can do this in field theory. I don't know what examples, but there people are doing.
Well, they sort of relate, isn't that paper designed at MIT that so he sort of relates that's the Gilpin number, I guess. So relates that to the dynamics of fermion in 1+1 by Brian. Yeah. Isn't that related? This law comes from somehow relates the entanglement entropy to the Kharbi formula.
This is a useful way of thinking about a law. You think about the Fermi surface as a collection of 1+1 dimensions. This is individual. Anyone have the Fermi surface?
The logs from the dimensions. It basically boils down. I mean, just boils down to Kharbi formula, I guess, in 1+1. Yeah.
So let me ask the few kind of people in the room, how certain they are that they have to get along, even if there's some fermionic physics.
Well, the fermions crystallize, you know. But I mean, I think if you have a singular surfaces in momentum space, pretty likely, I think you probably have to. Well, I mean, it's the physics of what John is saying. If you have some singular surface, then, you know, in momentum space, then transverse to that, it at some level looks like a one-dimensional, your 1+1 theory. You get the log off from that, and then you run around the surface here.
Could interactions change this picture at all? Yeah.
No.
Well, I think
any more the interactions change C as some sort of charge, right? That wouldn't affect this, right? That would change the coefficient out front of the young log out.
So
this is just a correlated signal of that and the scalars in the left space. So you wouldn't be surprised if you don't know one yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So it seems to me it's string stuff that you're probably.
I think there is some tension. I mean, maybe everything's hidden in alpha prime, you know, in Solvitian corrections, but you would have thought there should be some situation where it could be made leading order. And
well, here, let me try to ask the question differently. For the situation where you see the singularities of momentum space in the current correlator, but you don't see the log yet. At whatever level you want to work.
Is holography, you mean? In holography, we haven't seen any 2K singularities yet. So.
But in looking at it, it's still a log L, right? Where this exponent is changing.
Yeah. So, well, in fact, it's general for a conformal theory where you want the one dimension to see log L, right? Where this is a charge.
So then, I mean, if there's no, I mean, if we have, let's say, we find holographically, you know, compressible phases of matter at finite density that do not have this at leading order, then maybe that means that it's on the Fermi surfaces. But that then also conflicts some other intuition. So another possibility is that these are compressible. Finite density phases with no Fermi surfaces.
So Sean, in an example of Tadashi's that worked at global supergravity from a log, did it also happen in the left
picture? Nobody has a major choice. That's it. It's not like a well-defined calculation. I don't know why. Okay. I would guess it doesn't, but it's worth trying. Yeah, that's the correct point. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a great point. So yeah, maybe. Yeah, so Eva's suggestion, so following Matt's point that this log is closely related to the singularities in the momentum space, that one could just calculate basically, JT, it's kind of only equal zero in function of k. See, it has some non-analytic behavior at some, yeah. Sorry? Yeah, I don't think it will either.
But in 2D, in 1 plus 1, or the entire dimension is C log L in 2D, in 1 plus 1. So does that formula, you get a log in attack controls, right?
No, but 1D is a bit cheap, a log, yeah.
Sean, by the way, one comment I can perhaps make is that these top-down calculations that I recently did with Jerome and Dan, we also didn't find a premise of the singularity in this one. Well, one of the problems that we posed was that, you know, from studying the literature, you'd expect any compressible finite density phase.
No, okay, sure. But that's a different question.
I mean, there may be other reasons for it, but it's...
No, but that just means we have fractionalized Fermi surfaces, whatever they are. I mean, so clearly...
Not necessarily.
I mean, okay. If fractionalized Fermi surface means the absence of a Gaussian invariant Fermi surface, then it does. I mean, it's okay. So another good... That comes back to what Mohammed said. So this whole discussion is when the Fermi surfaces are not just manifest. So when we have gauge invariants, KF singularities, right? It's another. When we actually have gauge invariant manifest Fermi surfaces. Manifest. Everything's gauge invariant. So we have obvious Fermi surfaces. Which you don't have to. I mean, it's a function of. So, for example, in this paper, you can dial relevant couplings, and these things can appear and disappear. So it's not a stable fact.
The general statement still apply.
Right. So good. So you could ask, do these when you have.
So in other words, in those parameter ranges, we don't get them. Are they really a good?
Well, that's right. That's what it is. This question.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. All possible outcomes are interesting. So it's.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there is another angle.
Is that result finite temperature or zero temperature?
Zero temperature. So actually, now we could ask, when you have manifest Fermi surfaces, they had really better give you a log, I think, and. I think they will, but this hasn't been. So we don't have a formula. So suppose you have some Fermi surfaces in the bulk. How do you calculate the entanglement entropy of some region in the boundary, allowing for the effect, including the effect of these Fermi surfaces? So that must obviously be a correction to the Ryu Takayanagi formula, but it hasn't been written down. It's a conjecture, it's a natural conjecture. So you have this minimal surface that. That Tadashi, and so the Ryu Takayanagi formula is the area of the surface. So very natural. This can't be exactly right, but at least in the fluid limit that I understand, it's natural just to take this region in the bulk where it intersects the fluid, and that the entanglement entropy would be the entanglement entropy in the bulk of these fermions that are inside this region that intersects. Because the question is, you need to associate some region that. These fermions in the bulk will have a very conventional entanglement entropy. They're just free fermions. But you need to associate some region with the region at the boundary to calculate the entanglement entropy of. And I know. And maybe it's that. Maybe that seems like the most minimal region that you have. But it'd be nice.
So then you're saying that so you get the leading divergences, the non-universal pieces from like the boundary of. The space-time, but the universal pieces from that little piece of surface dipping into the...
Maybe. I mean, it seems like a minimal possibility. But something like, okay, somebody should write down a generalization of Ryu Takayanagi that includes matter in the bulk. But I mean, like this, see if they can get a log.
So they wouldn't say it's just...
I think it can't be. I mean, because okay, I think fermions are special because they're sort of one. It's really a one loop correction. Even if they back, even when they back react with leading order, it's sort of secretly one. That's right. I mean, it could happen at leading. It could be leading order, but it's still a quantum correction. It's not a VEV. So fermions are not condensates of anything. So they're only, so in that sense, they're always one loop, even when there are lots of them. Mm-hmm. So it could be, right, yeah. So one loop effect can still be leading order, like chairs and modules and stuff. I think it's just to determine, not that we have a generalized formula, but if you imagine some general formula of which the root Takinati is like a saddle point, then it would be that it would be the determinant correction. It happens to be big because there'd be lots of fields going in loops. So something a bit like that. Which does bring me, I think there's definitely stuff to be,
right. You can't get rid of the LIL by adding together lots of things.
Oh yeah, like in this case, maybe even.
Suppose that this is maybe described as some large number of terms, or this is different chaotics different short distance.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, same.
So yeah. The argument of each law is a little different, and the coefficient of time
is actually really negative. So you're saying they were canceled.
It can't be negative.
It might be an integral of a log or something.
I don't know.
So it might be
larger than that.
Angry.
But what's the question?
So I think what I was saying, you might have some, you know, some integrals over.
Something that's totally schematic, but there might be many Fermi surfaces with logs, and when you integrate it,
you might get some other.
Thanks.
Yeah. So this is like L affecting L.
It does have short distance physics. There is a unique cutoff in
there. The log out long distance.
Right.
maybe someone else has an open question.
Maybe it would be good to ask how much one can learn about mock physics from EBS. I mean, those are lattice effects, I guess, but commensurability between particle number and lattice points. But analogous things, it's more clear, I guess. Into that.
So what's the essence of mod physics in the sense that?
Well, I didn't see my guess.
The physics, yeah, because I guess Philip gave a talk about mod physics on Monday, but I wanted maybe.
So if you have a finite density of fermions, but there's one, spin fermion, but there's one fermion per site, on a lattice, you can get an insulator. You don't have a Fermi surface. You can still have very non-trivial spin physics or.
So like insulators, just
so you mean
non-trivial insulators? Is that?
Well, but then you can dope it. You can move away from that and ask what, is your Fermi volume the count the total number of electrons or just the doped hole?
Isn't that really tied up with finding the gravity through a covered model?
You could, if you want a simpler, you could ask about bosonic mod physics.
Either one would require that you have to.
But you still need a lattice, if you could have one boson per site on average, and you have a superfluid of the lattice.
Yeah, but that would require having a lattice.
So John wrote a paper once, the title I think had something like translation variant mod insulator.
The last paragraph of the paper.
So.
That was a single author paper, I hope.
I guess part of the idea must have been that it might be possible to extract some of the essential physics that's going into the mod transition divorce from a lattice was
do
Do you actually believe it, John?
Well, okay, so we made this conjecture that this graduate solution we found describes a finite density with a gap to all charge excitations except for the overall translation mode. So if you put the thing in the field, it'll accelerate. But the conjecture is that if you hold it down, that it won't, that it's rigid.
With no circuit breaking.
Right. And it's and we say this just based on the fact that it's a geometry which describes a system of finite density, but which nevertheless has this sort of confined feature that it ends smoothly at some finite radial distance. And if you compute the spectrum of the spectrum of the current product, the fluctuations and deviation in the bulk, there's a gap. There's a discrete spectrum. So that's the basis for our claim, and then there are many reasons why this is a confusing claim. And I guess one thing that may make everyone a little happier is that I think it's probably not true that there's an overall gap, meaning that I think there are gapless neutral modes, which I think maybe makes everyone a little happy.
The connectivity has a delta function.
The connectivity has a delta function, yes. It's from this translation, it's from the center of mass mode.
If the delta function, then it's constant, then it does stuff, is that?
There's something in the delta functions that I have to see these delta functions. Right. There's a gap.
So you have
this comes back.
If you hold it, then the delta function goes away.
Right. That's right.
But by holding, you mean changing boundary condition or something?
So just pin somewhere else.
And it feels like it's translational symmetry broken in this state.
There's no evidence of it in the geometry. Maybe it's a large N artifact. There's definitely no lattice in sight. Mm-hmm. so the reason it's this thing is well hidden is because the actual subject of the paper was an attempt to generalize these holographic realizations of Schrodinger symmetry to a case where there wasn't this extra circle. And so it's a solution which is asymptotic to Schrodinger in a sense. It's just a solution. There's some simple gravity equations for the PhD.
One other thing is that the particle number actually in this case mixes with the space-time symmetries, like that it's a central charge of the Galilean algebra. So it's not the usual particle number we think of in kind of spatial system.
Do you think there might be some funniness about what we mean by finite charge density?
Yeah.
So far as these kind of things are related to questions of confinement, so it's engaged some emerging gauge field. That's definitely. I mean, it seems possible along the lines of John saying that the essential effective field theory physics is not necessarily tied to the existence of a lattice, right? It's just that there's sort of a, as maybe as Philip was stressing, a sort of reconfiguration of the degrees of freedom from different parts of the spectrum.
Definitely extreme large physics doesn't know about the gap,
it's
effective
other reason. Yeah, but there's this delta function, which is this really annoying thing that it's somehow IR and UV at the same at the same time. But
I mean, you do have some hidden transitional symmetry, but that would be quite interesting. I mean, it wouldn't be. You don't have to put in the last by hand, then you're getting them all through there.
Isn't there a paper by Rigatak and Agi on conductivity in these impure systems, and he breaks sort of translation invariance, and he has some
yet.
A little confusion. In the first half of that paper, they have constructed a series of potentials which don't have any impurities at all, and they are getting the conductivity going to zero. And if you look at his metric, it's completely, you know, space-time, it's completely translationally invariant. So I asked him about this, and he said he doesn't have any idea why and how these two things are consistent.
So there's one well-known loophole. I don't know exactly which paper you're referring to, but I mean, if you have a probe grain and it's not back-reacting on the geometry, then you'll get a finite DC conductivity because it dissipates, it dumps all its momentum into another sector that's very big, and the momentum doesn't come back. And you, so I'm saying if you have a order one charge degrees of freedom coupled to order n squared neutral degrees of freedom, and then you calculate the conductivity at leading order and n squared, and then you don't get a delta function. But if you don't do that, I think you have to get a delta function.
That seems to be different.
It's different from that. But then again, look, this paper is very sketchy, so
yeah, there is this other holographic model that is familiar in the different paper by Tadashi, which is nothing.
I think that's the paper right there.
That's
the paper we're talking about.
There's no disorder in that one.
Yeah, there's no disorder in that one, right? And
oh, right, so this is just, I think you're just saying, confinement and gapping.
But it's also zero density.
Right, you're also...
Is there any holographic example that after you go through some quantum critical point and the phase that follows, the ordering is not a subgroup of the disorder phase, so to speak?
I think.
Is there?
If I remember correctly, I think the ordering is a subgroup with a symmetry that exists at the critical point. It just doesn't exist on the other side of the critical. Is that correct? So it's true that you have the
different broken symmetry.
Yeah, different broken symmetries on both sides, but they both exist sort of
in the
critical point, right?
Yeah.
So once you've got to your critical point, I think it's not that mysterious. You just break different things. It's just what's been.
No, but there's one relevant direction. And depending on the sign of it, it couple might go to one phase or the other. You're not moving off as in some of the direction you are do flow.
So normally we have two symmetries, you have two relevant directions. Here you only have one relevant direction.
Right, and the sign, right, and depending on the sign.
But that's not what Sean is saying. Sean is saying there's a larger group and it's broken in two different ways.
That's true, right?
That's true. I mean, the critical point, you have both symmetries.
Yeah. So, I don't know about holographically, but so actually, Subir and Sheehan do have a paper on a supersymmetric realization of this. So, this is a Coulomb and Higgs, somebody?
So they have a superconformal, you can, there's a superconformal n equals 2 theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions that has two branches, two
I think it's, is it two branches that's different than?
No, it's morally the same. I mean, the two things on either side are related to each other in the same way as these two in the original.
You're saying the thing that doesn't come is that you can only turn on one at a time.
Somebody might have looked at this more recently.
I mean, yeah. But you're saying something about the modulus things?
No, it might be a marginal mode in this case. Yeah, that might be true. You get an enhanced symmetry at the CFT, with an enhanced symmetry at the critical point. It's the same as a condensated monopole operators on one side.
Yeah, it's supposed to be negation, that happens. You mean like accidental symmetry that you see at like side with dual of. In this case, I guess, like mirror symmetry.
Right, it's related to mirror symmetry, yeah, absolutely. But I'm saying if you could take a large end limit of this, maybe you get it holographically. I'm not too much.
You're saying you don't need to, that super, you can use.
Right, you can just do it in field theory, yeah, exactly, right.
So there are some points on modular space with enhanced symmetries, and then those points are going to be interpreted as quantum critical points somehow.
Well, they have a scaling invariance, which the other points don't have. Okay, I'll mention one more thing, and then no one else has done anything. We're done. So. And this is a slightly personal confusion, so maybe other people don't care about it. But so there's been all these attempts to put matter, you know, charged fermions in the bulk. And there's a question of how you do that. And so just for simplicity, it's often convenient to work in a fluid limit. But then some people don't like this because you get lots of Fermi surfaces in the field theory, and this is nothing mysterious really. It's, I mean, there's some fluid living here, and the fermions at different radii are. So what's a Fermi surface is a singularity that appears when I send in something from the boundary. It sort of excites, something comes back, and so I see, and all the different radii end up having different values of KF depending where you excite the fermion. In actually existing quantum gravity, which is, you know, the world we live in, which you had better not disprove the existence. So, you know, there are black holes, there are sort of galaxies, and there are fluids, you know, all around us. And what there are not are sort of quantum gravitating Fermi surfaces. I mean, they're not right. And
no, that's not true.
No, it's not.
The electrons in a metal.
But they're not a leading order. I mean, not
because the electrons are lighter than the ions.
No. Their electric charge is much bigger than their gravitational.
You think they don't gravitate?
Yeah, right. Gravitate. No, of course they gravitate, yes. No, I...
What are you saying?
A leading order effect is that the gravity is negligible, right?
You mean the gravity doesn't influence the propagation?
And vice versa, you know.
influence the problem because we're in paratons.
If your piece of copper gets big enough, it forms a black hole.
No, but no. More to the point, it forms a star, right? I mean, and a star, right? Has lots of Fermi surfaces in it when you sort of project it from a distance, and so maybe this is. Is there some tension between?
Small.
This is not a well-defined question.
Wait, do you have a question about, say, neutron stars or degenerate stars?
A question? Well, I mean.
No, it's questions about why is it. Well, I don't want to state what your question is, but.
No, let me give you two. Give me 30 seconds. No, the question. This is really not a well-defined question, but. The things that are all around us look weird when, from a boundary point of view, when you put them in the ball. That's what I mean, right? So when you
and a star.
I mean, a star.
Could that?
That's
so, yeah.
Yeah. So a star is a pretty normal thing, right, by its perspective, and yet people are complaining that it doesn't look normal. There's no reason that normal should be dual to normal, of course. I don't know. I find a little. Okay. The most optimistic reading was whether there could be a lesson for the boundary that maybe these many Fermi surfaces do mean something. But, okay, the other. It could just be an artifact of large N in the boundary, of course.
So your real question is this fluid treatment sufficient to treat the back reaction?
Are you asking if they're going to clump?
Oh, good. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's good. I mean, that's yeah, right. And that ties into the space-time symmetry breaking.
Right.
I mean, so gravity famously, breaks translation symmetry, and that's why we have galaxies and everything. So yeah, but that's question.
So should we thank John?
Sorry, one more question. Can I go back to lattice for a second? Because I can think of two ways to put lattices into this. One is to put a lattice of defects, the way Chandra talked about. And the things that live, that go up, the things that sort of live on the lattice are localized. They can't hop. You can't have something that hop. So you have some lattice brain intersecting with a color brain. And it's a string that lives on the intersection. And it can't hop to the next thing over because there's a conserved number on each site. So it's more like kind of this thing you can't move. The other thing you can do, has anybody done this? You can modulate the Lagrangian of the field theory.
Of course.
And has this been, I mean.
I think it's been on many people's minds for a while. I don't know what stage.
I think
Alan and people are thinking about that. I think Gary Horace is might be thinking about that too.
It's much harder for the supergravity and less symmetry. Anything come out of that?
I think in the next 6 months, or maybe less, there might be some. Yeah.
That's how we started the Mott problem, but we got sidetracked. But we're getting back to that.
No, so people are not afraid of PDEs anymore, it seems, so maybe. That was disorder, and then there was sort of averaging. I don't think there's one lattice.
But then they talked about how you get a lattice at the end, but that's, right.
I can tell you something weird, though, that I find a little weird. The reason that's not identical to the Knitzmann lattice is that it's a sort of, it's a mix of the UV.
I'm sorry.
No, go with it.
How about changing, pneumaticity of the space? Kind of stretched more in one direction than the other, which is maybe a little simpler than putting a modulation on that.
That's
pretty easy, right?
And there are actually some papers on, so in the context of the quark gluon plasma, there have been papers about the effects of anisotropy. So there are these pancakes, so these heavy nuclei hit each other and they become very pancake-like because they're accelerated so much. And So there have been papers, you can put in.
Yeah, so actually putting in nematicity.
It's not hard.
But having different nematicities in different fields, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
what I see.
Interesting, like, phenomena associated that there are these materials that superconduct in one direction, but not in the, so in I guess 3D, they superconduct on the plane, but they do not superconduct on the direction transverse of the plane. They don't want to flatten the light space.
But they're three-dimensional?
So these are, I guess, three-dimensionals. I don't know the details of it very much, but I know that these are superconductors in the plane, but not in the direction transverse to the plane or something like that.
Well, the cup zones are too long in the direction, so basically cup runs like planes.
Can I just talk about these classes? There are two important aspects of the mod problem which you're missing so far. One of them is the lattice, and the other one is the particles. The reason the lattice is important is because the particles can sit in the side of the lattice.
Yeah,
here in UV, there's just no such thing at all. I mean, it's very far from the expectations of the theories we've been studying, and it's not particles. And I think this is also part of the reason why Kushner
can. I don't know, but it's really the commensurability between the pair, you know, the periodic right. potential and the density. And that's just why you come up with potential. So you don't really need to.
But it matters if it's a density of particles or
you count. It's a conserved density. I mean,
you can't just specify a charge density. You have to.
You have to know
whereas
the charge is a root of the
matter.
It has to be quantized.
Whereas
you count it in another.
And this is exactly what I was going to say about Joel's comment that it is weird. So you can put in like a modulated, background A0, background lattice of ions, right? But what really happens in Gnetzella is you add, there's a UV description where there's stuff localized that's hopping around the lattices, and then you take a quantum a limit, and then you have some continuum description, and this lattice maybe appears with some irrelevant operators in the continuum limit that will break translation symmetry. But what we'd have in ADS-CFT would be, if we do this, is some mix of these two pictures where you just have the field theory is living everywhere, the degrees of freedom are living everywhere, and there's a lattice on top of it. And so here it is a little, it's a mixed.
That's just whether it's a large potential or a small potential.
But you could.
I mean, we don't have to take type binding models. Or, yeah. You could take a periodic potential and have block states. And then,
yes, right. So it's not type binding. Yeah, I guess that's right. It's always like a weak binding. Yeah. But actually, that would, of course, it'd be great. I mean, there might be some version of localization. So what if you take these things sufficiently big, but even then, what's a little weird is that you won't get an electron, but just get a puddle. You sort of get a puddle of n equals 4 theory, presumably localized around each.
Is that okay?
I don't know.
Wonder about how many. Well, but actually, you don't have a number of particles that are in each puddle. Because if it does, then make the potential. Change the period, right?
Make it one.
Yeah, make it one. don't you have quantized fields in your field theory? It's sort of a notion of that. You have quantized charge.
You tend to have these over n rather than the n. How do you do?
One
particle per site or two particles per site.
Thanks to the organizers. The organizers, the three of you. And, thank you.